The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
Live from West Babylon, New York, this is Sports Talk 1240.
What's up, everybody? This is hour two of Sports Talk 1240 WGBB. I'm your host, Andy Sukoff, and you can hit me up on Twitter at Andy_Sukoff. Phone lines are open at 631-888-8811. But if you have something that's not safe for work, hit me up there, AM1240WGBB.com or the TuneIn Radio app. So we got a good show for you tonight. Couple big guests, including the guy sitting here with me, plays hockey at Stony Brook University, Devin Palmieri. Devin, thank you for joining me today. It's nice to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, he plays, like I said, plays at Stony Brook. They played Nationals a couple weeks ago. Fortunately, didn't get to where they wanted to be. A couple bad calls didn't really go their way. But calling in a few minutes, we'll have his brother, Kyle Palmieri, who plays for the New Jersey Devils. So we're excited to have him. Before Kyle gets on, let's talk a little bit about the national tournament. You guys were the 11th seed, and you had that first game against Lindenwood, who were the defending national champions. And you guys won on a late goal by defenseman Frank Kasha. What was kind of the mindset going into that game?
We were really excited to be there. Everyone was pumped up for the game, and going in like being the underdog, it's kind of nice being the underdog. Really nothing to lose, so we just played our hardest, and our goalie played out of his mind. So that kind of fueled us. And once it was 2-2, I think it was like 20 seconds left, and Kasha scored. It was just like an awesome feeling, And that actually led into the next game when we played Ohio. We were just pumped up for the game, and it was exciting. It was a good time being there.
Yeah, and you guys were in Columbus. You're playing at the Blue Jackets practice facility, which, based on what I saw when I was watching, really nice-looking place.
Yeah, it was awesome. The rink was awesome. The ice was perfect. It was a really cool setup for everything, and it was my first time, being at Nationals, and it was a really good experience. Everything about it was cool.
Yeah. Going into that second game against Ohio, you guys were fighting to go to the semifinals, where Stony Brook is familiar. They've been there before. They played a lot of high-profile games over the last few years, and one call changed the whole tide of that game.
Yeah, I think there was maybe 3 minutes, 4 minutes left. We were on the power play, and then we lost the puck. They went down 2-on-1, and they took a shot, rebound, the guy whiffed on it, and our goalie got a piece of it, but when the net went off, I guess they first called it no goal, so when they went to the review, we were getting kind of nervous when they were taking a while to look over it, but when they called it a goal, we were all pretty rattled. Every member of my family was watching online, and no one thought it was a goal. Everyone we talked to really didn't think it was a goal. Even they were saying that announcers didn't think so either. But, they made the call. Nothing we could do about it. We tried to fight back, but it's tough. After, it's like a heartbreaker when they score it that late on something. It's real questionable, but really nothing you could do about it.
Yeah, well, right now we have Kyle Palmieri in the line, and we'll ask him, did you think it was a goal, Kyle?
I didn't think it was a goal. Watching at home on my laptop, and I disagree with the call, that's for sure.
All right, well, thank you for joining us. Tough game today against Columbus. It's not often you see two penalty shots in one game.
Yeah, no, it's been a tough stretch. One the other night in Pittsburgh, and then two tonight that didn't go our way. But it's a couple tough calls, but we did our best to try and battle back, and just wasn't enough.
All right. Well, we'll jump right into it. We have Devin here in the studio with me, and I just kind of wanted to talk a little bit about you guys growing up in New Jersey and being able to play hockey against each other. And I guess the first question is, and you both can answer, why hockey over anything else? Kyle, you can go first.
For me, it started, both our older sisters, were both gymnasts, and, I originally got introduced to hockey through one of their gymnastics friends' little brother, was a hockey player, and they had a homemade ice rink in their backyard, and I remember we went over there for a day to hang out because we'd do anything to avoid watching our sisters do gymnastics. So went over there and got a pair of skates that fit, and I fell in love with hockey right away. The son that we were family friends with, he was a couple years older than me, but so a couple of his friends were a little older and bigger, and I was getting knocked around a little bit, but didn't make me shy away from the game. I went home that day and demanded to my dad to teach me how to skate, and unlucky enough for him, he did not know how to skate, so we kind of just learned together. And then as Dev grew up, he wanted to join in on the party, and we were very fortunate to grow up on a farm in northern New Jersey there, and we had a ton of land. And I think Dev probably would have been 5 or 6 when we first built the rink, and I'm 4 years older than him, so it was something that he had basically his whole hockey career, and I got once I kind of started to love it more, and I was doing travel hockey, and Dev learned how to skate, and he ran with it. It was a lot of fun having a little brother that played hockey too.
Yeah, Devin, you were telling me about this rink before we went on the air, and how it was a pretty decent size for what it was.
Yeah, I mean, not a lot of kids get to say they had like a 40-foot by 80-foot rink in their backyard, so it was definitely it was very cool being able to have that opportunity to have a rink. And just being out there, like, in the winter, snowing, me and my brother, his friends would come over, we would all be playing on the rink, and it was a great experience being able to do that. Just every night going out there after school, skating around. I mean, I wasn't as good as Kyle and his friends, so I would be kind of like the cone out there, but it was still a great time. It was and I enjoyed it. It was a really special time.
Yeah, so Kyle, I guess growing up, you won more of those 3-on-3s at that point.
I think Dev even he got lucky enough to be able to strap on the pad and play goalie for a few. I don't know how much he enjoyed that. Obviously not that much because he didn't become a goalie, but no, it was a blast, and I think my parents will tell you that they had to do everything they could to try and get us in to go to sleep or do our homework or eat dinner. We were out there all night, and it was something, looking back, it was some of the best times of your life.
And you know, as you guys got older, and you know, Kyle, you went on to play at Notre Dame, and you got to play with some players who were like you in the NHL now. You know, can you talk about like that experience from that year at Notre Dame?
Yeah, Notre Dame was awesome. It was one of those things that growing up in New Jersey, especially when I was a kid, hockey in New Jersey definitely wasn't what it was now. And that's something that you look over the years and you see how much it's grown in this area. Back then there was probably only a handful of teams within driving distance that had AAA programs, and now you look and there's so many opportunities for kids to play and move on to the national level, and I was lucky enough to be offered a chance to play at Notre Dame, and it was somewhere that as soon as I stepped on campus, me and my parents, we fell in love with it. We fell in love with the program and the school, and it was just something that we couldn't get enough. And obviously I would have loved to spend 4 years there and graduate. But it was an opportunity for me to move on to the next level and start my hockey career as a professional. And that was an opportunity I couldn't pass up.
And Devin, I'm guessing you got to see a couple games out in South Bend. What was the atmosphere like over watching those games?
Oh yeah, it was awesome. I mean, just really any like D1 college hockey game, like the atmosphere is unbelievable with all the students. It's a lot different than when you go like I played travel hockey my whole life, and when it goes from just having like your parents in the stands like cheering you on to like a couple hundred students just having a great time, like it's really cool to watch, and like a great atmosphere awesome to be a part of.
And now you're seeing it at Stony Brook, where, you know, it's not just parents. You know, you're seeing they get the band out there. They get a bunch of people there. I'm sure it's nice for the psyche to know that, hey, people are coming to see us play.
Yeah, absolutely. Having fans there, it makes it 10 times better, just having people cheering you on, and like especially when you get a couple of like your friends from school. And I mean, actually, it's amazing how many people from the community come out, and we get like a couple hundred fans there, and it's really cool.
Yeah. Now, I'll let you both answer this. Growing up in New Jersey, did you guys grow up as Devils fans, or were you fans of other teams?
I can't even remember back in the day, but I'm pretty sure I was a Devils fan for most of my life. And then I think for some reason I became a Buffalo Sabres fan. I couldn't tell you why, but then once Kyle got drafted to the Ducks, I guess I kind of had to be a Ducks fan. And I just, whatever team he's playing for now is my new favorite team.
Kyle, how about you? Did you grow up a Devils fan, or were you rooting for somebody else?
For me, I grew up a Rangers fan. I think it was one of those things, I guess, Dev having been born in New Jersey, he laid his claim to fame as more of a hometown team. And technically, I was born on Long Island, so I probably should have been an Islanders fan. But
you made the right decision not to be.
And yeah, for me, I think the Rangers, they won the Cup there in 94. And I remember as a kid, I used to watch their Stanley Cup video that kind of went over their whole season in the playoffs. And that was something I'd watch on repeat anytime I can sit down and watch TV.
Yeah, I mean, I was just a kid when they won the Cup as well. It's like one of the first games I remember was my dad took me to a game back in like 98, and like that's kind of what got me into hockey. So it was like that's something that, you know, it's always good. Like you said, like you got to learn how to skate with your dad. It's like one of those things. Like family is very important when it comes to the things you do growing up.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's something that. I mean, my dad grew up in Long Island, and he, during the Islanders run there, I mean, he was an Islanders fan, so I guess he probably wasn't all that happy that I picked the Rangers, but it was back in the days of Brian Leetch and Adam Graves and Messier, and those guys were guys I wanted to be like when I grew up, and when I aspired to try and be an NHL player, those are the guys that I was kind of growing up watching. So it was definitely special for me.
Yeah. All right. Now, Devin, I'll send this question to you first. When he got drafted by the Ducks, and you got to see him play with guys like Corey Perry, Ryan Getzlaff, and a legend like Timo Solani, you know, what was that going through your head, like knowing that he got to play with with guys like that?
I mean, it's awesome that he got to play with those guys. I remember when he first got called up, and the coach threw him on a line with, like, Corey Perry and Getzlaff, and, like, he was only, like, 19, 20 years old playing with two superstars with, like, Solani on the team, too. It's just, it's so cool to be able to do that. And I also got to meet a bunch of guys, so, I mean, that's, like, kind of one of the perks being Kyle's brother. I mean, a lot of very good hockey players, and it's really cool, like, being able to see him play with all those guys.
And Kyle, what were some of the biggest things you learned from veterans like that as you were coming up through the Ducks ranks?
Like you mentioned, I had a very, very fortunate experience to be around some future Hall of Famers and Teemu and Saku Koivu, and those are guys you look at and you look at their careers and the amount of teams and Stanley Cups that they've won. And I think you learn from Teemu the most that it's something that you could just sense every day that he came into the rink, how much he loved hockey. And you could tell by every summer that he'd go into it saying he was going to retire and spend time with his family. And then he'd come back at the end of August, right before training camp, and say he couldn't step away from the game. He wasn't ready to, because it was what he loved doing. And that kind of passion and exuberance that even 43-year-olds was displaying, it was kind of contagious. And And when I remember my first couple of years playing pro and adjusting to the season, how long of a grind 82 games could be with the travel, and you just see his face and how, I mean, even at his age, he goes out there and just has so much fun out there. That's something that, like I said before, it's just contagious for a young guy, an older guy. It doesn't matter. You look at him and how much fun he's having and how long he's been able to experience the thing he loves to do the most. And that's just something that learning as a young guy early on, that's what it's all about.
Yeah, just as a quick side note, I saw this today on Twitter. Your answer to a trivia question. Today, Sidney Crosby had scored a natural hat trick with the same two players, Gunsell and Connor Sheary, assisting on all three of his goals. The last time that happened, you scoring a hat trick with Corey Perry and Ryan Getzlaf assisting on all three of your goals in February of 2013. I saw that. I was like, that doesn't happen too often.
Yeah, no, it's pretty cool. I remember, I think we still have the picture and the plaque up in my parents' house with Perry and Getzlaf. Holding each one of the pucks, and it was a pretty special moment. You don't get too many hat tricks in your career. That's been my only one in the NHL, so I remember it pretty vividly.
So then, you know, before last season, you get traded to the New Jersey Devils. You get to play for the hometown team. When that happened, and you made the call to the family, like, hey, I'm coming home. Like, what was the reaction?
Well, actually, the weird part about when I got traded was I was actually on vacation in Ireland, and so my family knew about it before I did, and they had a little trouble getting a hold of me. It was something like 4 or 5 a.m. Local time where I was in Ireland, and obviously the first person who reached out to me was my agent, and I spoke with him and then the general managers for both teams, and then I got a chance to settle down. And it was actually, I think it was a day or two, right around my mom's birthday. So they were having a birthday party with some of their friends, and, I got to FaceTime them. And it was pitch black. I was in the lobby of the hotel, so I didn't wake my roommate up. And, it was a pretty special moment for me. At first, a lot of shock and nervousness and excitement, and it kind of just translated into, how exciting it would be for me to play in front of my family on a nightly basis and represent the team that, being a Devils youth program alumni, back when they were practicing at South Mountain where we played, it was something that you went into the rink for your weekend games on Saturday and Sunday, and if the Devils were there practicing, your head was glued to the glass and watching all the pros play. So it felt like everything kind of came a little full circle there for me.
And Devin, when you found out that he had gotten traded to the Devils, what did that make you kind of think?
I mean, I was really excited just because, like, as a brother, like, having my Kyle live all the way across the country in Anaheim, going from there to 40 minutes from our house, I was excited just to be able to, like, see him more than a couple times a year. And then I know my parents and I and, like, all of my family were also happy that instead of watching a game at 10:30 at night every time he played, we actually got to go see him play live at the Prudential Center. So I know my parents got season tickets. I know they went to, like, almost every game. And I tried to go as many games as I could that fit into my schedule. But it's really cool being able to see him play, and it's great having, like, our family all be able to go and see him. So it was cool. It was very, very nice being able to have him here in our home.
And you were saying one of the perks of being related to him that you got to meet all the players. When he got traded to the Devils, who was the one that you really wanted to see first?
I'd have to say Patrick Eliash, because I remember I went to one of his camps over the summer when I was, like, a little kid, and I met him. And I think that's how Kyle introduced me the first time I met. He introduced me to Eliash. He's like, oh, yeah, like, this is Devin. Like, he went to one of your camps. And I don't know, it was just really cool because, you know, Eliash was a great player and, like, a really, like, all-star, really. And being able to meet him, like, in person, it was nice. It was really cool.
So Kyle, what was the like what, getting to play with Patrick Elias at least that first season? You know, what was the like? What was the big thing that you got from him?
I mean, for him, like Devin said, he's one of those guys. He's got over 1,000 points, played for whatever 1,300, 1,400 NHL games, and you look at a career like that. Him being a Stanley Cup champion multiple times, it's something you walk into the locker room and even as a 25-year-old who had been around the league for 5 years, you walk in and you're in awe of that the situation. I was fortunate enough to sit next to him in the locker room, and he's one of the nicest guys off the ice, and I think it was a pleasure for me. Obviously, he was dealing with some injuries last year, which was tough, and but having him around and in the locker room and just trying to get as much knowledge as he can off of him and all the things that he's been through in his career, and he's been around the Devils his entire career, and that's something that not a lot of guys are fortunate enough to play that long, but to play it all with one franchise, it's pretty special to be around a player like that.
And now that you're like kind of like the like part of that core group of young guys that are going to be leading that next era of New Jersey Devils, that's got to be a nice thing to know that you're going to be a part of that at least for the next several seasons.
Yeah, for sure. Obviously, coming into after the trade, I had a year left on my contract and kind of knew it would be decision time after that, but. Obviously, I had so much fun with the guys last year and the coaching staff and the whole organization, and I was very fortunate for them to offer me a contract, a long-term contract, and that was something that it wasn't anything I could pass up. It was a huge opportunity for me and to know moving forward that I'd be part of the core that's going to rebuild and hopefully bring a Stanley Cup back to New Jersey.
All right, I'm going to jump to Devin here. You know, you're playing at Stony Brook now. You just finished up your first season here. What was the experience like playing your first season at Stony Brook?
It was a great experience. I was actually really surprised how high a level the hockey was. You know, most people think like D1 club, like it's kind of like glorified like men's league for college kids. But when I got there, I was amazed like how well some of these kids could play. Like, and honestly, I could definitely see our team like competing with a lot of D3 teams, and I know a lot of teams in our league could as well. So I was really impressed with that, and I had a great time this season. I mean, all the guys were awesome, and I met a lot of good people, and it was just it was a good time, you know. Played good hockey, and you know, so had a good time.
Yeah. What do you think the outlook for next season's gonna be?
Well, we're losing a lot of key players. We're losing JT Hall, Chris Stemke, a couple of D's. But I think we'll be able to pull in some good recruits, and I think we're going to be able to compete really well next year. I think a lot of guys are going to be able to step up, fill those positions, and we're going to be fine. We're going to make a run for the playoffs for sure and make nationals again. I think this year was like... the 19th year in a row that Stony Brook made it to nationals. So I know we're going to be able to keep that tradition going and hopefully come home with some hardware next year.
Kyle, besides the last game against Ohio, did you get to watch any of his games this year?
Yeah, I watched definitely the first one. I remember watching the first one and then a couple, and then I didn't get a chance to make it out to Stony Brook to watch a game at the rinks there, but I remember Dev. It was maybe November or December, and he was playing Rutgers, and me and my girlfriend made the trip down, and we both got to watch him for that game.
All right. Well, you know, you got an open invite to come to the rinks next season. Join me and Andy up in the booth, and you know, we'd love to have you, and I think it'll be a lot of fun.
I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. So just as a reminder, everybody, we got Devin and Kyle Palmieri here. We got a couple minutes before we're gonna go to break. So I'm just gonna, Kyle. I'm sure you know after a long game, you probably want to wind down. So I'll just ask you one more quick question. Where where do you see the Devils going in the next couple of years?
Well, that's the thing with pro hockey. Obviously, season to season, there's a lot of changeover in the lineups, and I think we were disappointed in the way this season went. I think we wanted to compete and if not make the playoffs, but we'll see what happens in the off season, and hopefully, like you said, we have a young core of guys that have been in the league a while now and are ready to take that next step and be competing in the end of April and hopefully on into deep into the playoffs. So I think next year that's the goal, is to get into the playoffs, and with the Stanley Cup playoffs, anything can happen. So we're looking forward to finishing this season strong and getting ready for next one.
And I'll leave this one for both of you. Who's winning the Stanley Cup this year?
I'm going to say the Capitals. I like the Capitals. They're a tough team to play against.
How about you, Devin? What do you got?
Yeah, I'm going to have to agree with Kyle on that one. I watched the Devils play the Capitals a couple weeks ago, and they're good. They can definitely win it this year.
All right. Well, Kyle, I want to thank you again for joining us. You know, it's greatly appreciated. I hope I can have you on again sometime.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right. Thank you, Kyle. And, Devin, I want to thank you as well for joining me in studio. You know, I know it's a bit of a drive, and you got class in the morning, so you were telling me you got a lot of work you got to do. So I don't want to keep you too much longer. So I appreciate you coming in.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.
All right. Well, we're gonna take a quick break. When we come back, some MLB talk and the madness known as March. You're listening to WGBB 1240.
Listening to Sports Talk 1240 on Long Island's AM 1240. WGBB.
Country Foot Care, official podiatrists of the New York Lizards, have been delivering state-of-the-art foot care with good old-fashioned caring to Long Island residents for over 30 years. Specialists in sports medicine and foot injuries, Country Foot Care can be reached at 516-741-FEET or online at countryfootcare.com.
Want to advertise your business on Sports Talk 1240? Place an ad on sportstalk1240.com and run a radio commercial during the show every Sunday night here on AM 1240 WGBB. Our rates are very affordable. We'll even produce the radio commercial for you. Just head over to sportstalk1240.com and fill out the Contact Us form and let us start promoting your business today.
Unflippable, unflappable, unleakable. The Gustbuster is the only umbrella that won't flip inside out, rip, tear, or leak. Capable of withstanding winds over 55 miles per hour. All of our umbrellas are constructed of the finest quality materials and backed by a limited lifetime guarantee. What are you waiting for? Visit Gustbuster.com and get your Gustbuster today.
Stay connected to Sports Talk 1240 by following us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Sports Talk 1240.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240, broadcasting every Sunday night beginning at 8 p.m. right here on Long Island's AM 1240 WGBB, the station that serves your community. And now, back to the show.
All right, we are back here for the second half of Hour 2. Sports Talk 1240. I'm your host, Andy Stukoff. Big shout out to my man Brian back there behind the glass making it all happen. And, you know, as they play that music leading back into the show, we're both sitting here just like bobbing our heads because it's very catchy. we have fun here. Again, want to thank Devin and Kyle Palmieri for joining me tonight. And, you know, that it'll be up tomorrow for anybody who misses it so you can hear it then. It's March. And everybody knows what happens in March. College basketball hits the forefront, and people start caring about teams like Florida Gulf Coast, Middle Tennessee, teams that if anybody told you those names, you would have said, who are they, and why do I care? Then March 1st comes around, and everybody starts caring. Like, oh, Winthrop went 31-2. You know, they're going to be a really good team going into the tournament. And then Selection Sunday, and you have those teams that are seeded, and you look at where they were seeded, and you wonder, why were they seeded there? Perfect example, Minnesota on Thursday. They're playing Middle Tennessee, you know, that team that you go, who are they? And Minnesota, A, was not only the underdog in that 5-12 game, they lost. They lost to that 12 seed who went on, and they moved on to the next round, played Butler. They lost there. But that's what makes March so mad, where all those things can happen at any given time, where everybody's brackets now are completely busted and destroyed, and you just look at what's going on with the craziness that we have going on right now. You look at some of these games, like for a game that just went final, number 11, Rhode Island, who a lot of people said at the beginning of the season could be that team that made that run as that lower seed, they pushed a number 3 seed Oregon to the brink, and they were winning at halftime, 46-38. Oregon turned it on in the second half and won 75-72, being led by Tyler Dorsey's 27 points on 9 of 10 shooting from the field. URI held their own, with Stanford Robinson shooting 10 of 12 from the field for 21 points, and unfortunately they weren't able to score enough. After jumping out to the 8-point lead, they scored only 26 points in the second half, which you're not going to win games if you score only 26 points. The madness of March. You have an Arkansas team ranked number as an 8 seed, pushing North Carolina to the brink. It was a 72-65 final, but it wasn't. The score is very deceiving because Arkansas got close. Michigan, as a 7 seed, upset Louisville earlier today. So you just look at all these crazy things that happen, and you wonder why nobody's got a perfect bracket, and it'll never happen because it's just so unpredictable that any given day, any one of these teams can win a game at the biggest moment and have their March moment that everyone at their school is going to remember forever. So we have a couple games in action right now, including USC and Baylor. And USC as an 11 seed is right now up on number 3 Baylor, 58-54, with about 9 minutes to go in the second half. And if you want to get involved with the show, lines are open at 631-888-8811. You know, we always want to hear from you and hear what you got to say, and you know, we can have a good conversation here. You know, I love talking sports with people, and I want to hear what the people have to say. Because just like the teams can get mad in March, so can everybody else. And that's what makes everything fun. You never know what it is you're going to hear on any given day. You look at some of these teams that are playing in the tournament right now. You got your Kentuckys, your UCLAs, Dukes, the teams that have been there every year, and they know exactly what they're doing. They've been there before. Their coaches have been there before, and you know that they're going to make those big runs that everybody's coming to expect. Then you have your teams like your Ionas or your Mount St. Mary's, who are the lower seeded teams that haven't been there in a while. And, you know, they're just excited to be there. And sometimes those are the teams that get crushed by your Kentuckys. But those are also the teams that provide some of those big moments. Like, I guess an example, many years ago, Bryce Drew for Valparaiso hitting that three, which gave them that upset win. So it's always fun to watch these games because you don't know who's going to be the hero on either side. What team that came in as the big bad dog that everybody was gunning for, that they want to beat, and then who's it going to be that takes them out? Wisconsin. On Wisconsin. They did what everybody was trying to do. They took out the Big East champion Villanova, the number 1 seed, and everybody was gunning for Villanova. They were the reigning national champions. They got the number 1 seed, won the Big East Conference. They're looking primed to repeat. They got into a draw where it was primed for a Villanova-Duke Elite 8 matchup at Madison Square Garden next Sunday. That won't be happening. Wisconsin did what only a couple teams have been able to do this season, and that's take down the Wildcats. They played their style of basketball and took that game to Villanova and forced them out of their comfort zone. That's what you got to do in the tournament. Teams tighten up. You got to take advantage of that fact and play to your strengths. Because if you try to play to another team's strengths, you're never going to win. It doesn't matter who you are. It doesn't matter who's coaching you. You could have Michael Jordan on the floor. And if you try to play to another team's level, it's not going to work. You need to play your style of basketball. And you can ask any coach that, and they're going to tell you, we played our game. We played our style, and that's how we won. So Wisconsin's going to be the one going to the Sweet 16 at Madison Square Garden next week, not Villanova. And a lot of people are really upset because they had Villanova as their national champion. So they're all out of money now that they're not going to be winning. And all the bookies are happy because they get to keep all their money. Louisville, another one that a lot of people were expecting to go very far. It's not meant to be, as Michigan, who just 2 weeks ago in the Big Ten tournament, their plane was getting pushed off the runway by high winds. And they had to play a tournament game in Washington, D.C. wearing practice jerseys. They didn't even have their real jerseys. They had to wear practice jerseys. And we're talking about practice. We really are. We're talking about practice, not the game. Well, technically, yes, the game. But we're talking about practice jerseys. They took down one of the best teams in America and a team that's won a national championship recently. So they're moving on. They're making their way to possibly a Final Four berth. And their road isn't exactly simple. They still have to go through teams like Kansas. Not exactly an easy challenge. They're going to have to go through Oregon first. Also, not an easy test. The Pac-12 this year had a lot of really good teams, including top three that were in top 10 position for pretty much most of the season in Oregon, UCLA, and Arizona. But talking about the Pac-12 leads me to one of my favorite things that happened this week. LaVar Ball. God bless that man. His son Lonzo, arguably the best player in college basketball right now, and could be the consensus number one pick in next year's draft. That man does not know when to put the mute button on his mouth. And it's great, because we get to hear some of these outlandish things, like, I could have beaten Michael Jordan one-on-one. I'm sorry, I just don't agree with that. Michael Jordan's the greatest player ever, and just because somewhere in your twisted mind you think you're better than Michael Jordan, you might be able to score a couple points on him. That's for sure a possibility. I mean, Michael Jordan is in his 50s now, so I don't think he's got that same explosive step that he did 25 years ago. I still don't think you're beating Michael Jordan 1-on-1. I don't care if you're in your athletic prime and you're shooting 70% from the field. Michael Jordan's probably still going to beat you. Then the next one came out. I'm trying to get a $1 billion shoe deal. And that's billion with a B for his three kids. So he wants all three of his kids covered by one shoe deal. Meanwhile, Lonzo Ball has not played 1 minute in the NBA. His other two kids have not even played a nanosecond of college basketball. They're still in high school. Unless your name is LeBron James and you're averaging 40 points a game, are you getting a shoe deal? It's not happening. You got to prove yourself before you're getting a shoe deal. Even Steph Curry had to prove himself before he got a shoe deal. He had to hit 300 some odd threes before that finally happened. And then, unfortunately for him, his house got broken into and some stuff was taken. So, like that, some people might say that's comeuppance for opening his mouth. And while you never want to see somebody get their personal belongings taken from them, because that's just not fun for anybody, because you have to jump through a whole bunch of hoops. Some people will say that it was that he had it coming. So for LaVar Ball, all I could say to you is think before you speak, and don't be telling people that your son is going to find the NBA easier than college, because guess what? He won't. And that leads you to wonder, what does Lonzo think about this? He has not said a word about it, about some of these things his dad has said. I know if my dad said something like that and somebody asked me about that, I would after I did my talk saying, like, I know nothing about this, and I did not tell him the saying this, I would be on the phone with my dad right the nanosecond after and said, stop. Like, stop saying these things, because you're gonna make me look bad. And that I wonder if that's going through Lonzo Ball's head right now, that the things my dad says can affect me later on in my career, and I don't want that. So he's got to be careful, and he might want to call his dad, you know, and just kind of hash out, be like, you got to stop, because this is getting ridiculous. Because I think even Lonzo Ball knows that the NBA is going to be much harder for him than the college game was, especially when you're coming out at 19 years old. Yes, you are an athletic freak, but you are still going up against men. You're going up against men who have been in that league for 5, 10 years. They know how the game is played, and they know how to play it on the best level. You don't yet. So you're going to have to pay your dues just like everybody else in that organization. Wherever you get drafted, be it the 76ers or the Celtics, or even if you get drafted to be LeBron James' understudy, I don't think you're going to fall that far. But for argument's sake, let's say you go and get drafted by the Cavaliers. Do you think LeBron James is going to put up with any of those kind of antics? And when LeVar Ball opens his mouth and says, my son should be the face of this franchise and not LeBron James, do you really think LeBron James would take anything like that? He would probably go to LeVar Ball's house and probably finish that argument right there in front of him. And that would make national news, that LeBron James went to LeVar Ball's house and laid down the law. It's always fun seeing these things happening on a world stage, because you like to see what everybody else has to say, and you like to see what everybody else is going to do. And that's going to kind of lead me into my next point with the World Baseball Classic. You're seeing the best players in the world on big stage before they all go to their regular jobs of being Major League Baseball players, where they get to play 162 games for one of those great 30 teams. And they all get together and they're playing for national pride at this point. And we saw last night arguably one of the greatest catches in baseball history. Manny Machado's at the plate for the Dominican Republic. In the outfield is his Baltimore Orioles teammate, Adam Jones, playing for the United States. And Machado hits one deep. It's going back, back, back. And there goes Adam Jones. He's going back, back, back with it. And he just leaps in with every inch of his arm that he has. He sticks that left arm out there, makes that catch right through the crowd of people that were there. And you kind of almost had to look twice to make sure, like, did that really just happen? Did Adam Jones just make probably the second greatest catch in baseball history behind Willie Mays? And what I call it one of the greatest catches ever? Yeah, I'd put it in the top five. I wouldn't say it's right behind Willie Mays, but it was an amazing catch because it saved the home run, and respect shows respect. You look at everybody around, and you look at the crowd. The crowd was going nuts when Adam Jones made that play. And now they go on to face Japan, who's undefeated in the semifinals. So props to the U.S. for getting that far, and it's good to see the American team getting to where they are now. But you look at some of those other storylines from the World Baseball Classic, and I think my favorite one is Team Israel. though they are not going to win, they put on a show for the first few days of the World Baseball Classic that nobody expected to see. Taking out a couple of world powers in Chinese Taipei and South Korea. And this is a team of a lot of career minor leaguers and a couple fringe MLB players who, you know, they're all, you know, they're Americans, Jewish heritage, and there's one Israeli guy on the team. So it's pretty much an entire American team and one Israeli guy. And you just watch this team play together, and it's amazing what they were able to do in that first week of the World Baseball Classic. They took it by storm, and people were getting behind them, and they and America's Finest Apparel came out with a shirt that had a rabbi holding a bat. When I'll admit I bought one because it looked fun and I liked it, so I bought it. And the storylines that came out of the World Baseball Classic are exactly what the people who put it together were looking for: a world stage for the best players to play and to make it a shared event for the entire world community, and, you know, to make a few bucks. That doesn't hurt either. So you have teams from all over the world: Cuba, the Netherlands, Italy, the United States, Canada. Everybody's getting their best players together, and you're seeing essentially the baseball Olympics, because the pros can't go play the regular Olympics because it's in the middle of the season, and you can't shut down baseball for 2 weeks. Otherwise, we'd be playing Game 7 of the World Series on Christmas. And some people might be okay with that. I'm sure Major League Baseball would not be, because especially like if a team like the Minnesota Twins made the World Series, playing Game 7 in Minnesota would have to be arguably one of the worst things ever on Christmas Day, where you would be playing in 8 feet of snow, and you have a better shot of the Minnesota Vikings playing at that game than the Minnesota Twins. But I digress. Since we're talking baseball, we don't want to be talking about baseball on Christmas in 8 feet of snow. They're down in Florida right now, where it's sunny. It's 75. There's no snow on the ground. They don't know what snow is. I wish we didn't know what snow was. But March is mad, and she dumped snow on us this week. So we can only look in envy at those guys down in Florida and in Arizona, where they get to play baseball every day and not have to worry about shoveling out their driveway or not being able to get their car up an incline because the ice is making your tires spin. They just get to pull out of their place, go right to the field, and they're all good. And we're just about 2 weeks away from the start of the regular season. My favorite time of year. I love the start of baseball season. Opening day should be a national holiday. Well, not really, but it should be one of those days where if somebody doesn't go into work, it should be totally understood, and it could be used as an excuse. You know, a lot of teams play in the afternoon, and, you know, it's the beginning of April. The sun's starting to come out. It's starting to get a little bit warmer, and players are on the field playing America's pastime. We're just 2 weeks away from that day, and I cannot wait. You got two teams here in the New York area. They're on two different paths. The Mets are in win now mode. They are set up that they need to bring home that World Series trophy in the next few years. Their pitchers are in their prime. Knock on wood for them, all of them are healthy. Noah Syndergaard came into camp in great shape. Jacob DeGrom is back healthy. Matt Harvey's been pitching, and, you know, he's been caught hanging out with Adriana Lima, which I have to say good for him. Zach Wheeler's on the mend. He's almost there. The only thing that's missing from that camp is Bartolo Colon. And, you know, that I wish him well in Atlanta, and I'm sure he's going to do very well down there. The Yankees, they're bringing on the youth movements here. We saw it at towards the end of last season in August. They started bringing everybody up, and Gary Sanchez was hitting home runs, it seemed like, every other at bat. Aaron Judge, you know, you're excited by what a guy who's 6'7" and 265 pounds can bring. Maybe he can play for the Jets too in the offseason. He might be able to catch a passer, block a linebacker. I don't know, but you like what you see from him. Greg Bird's coming back off of shoulder surgery last season, so you don't know what you're going to get out of him. So we'll see how that kind of goes, and we'll see how they ease him back into playing full games during the regular season. So their youth movement's here. They know that they're a couple years away from really contending, but if things go well, they can be competitive, and they could be there until the last couple games of the season. It's all going to come down to the health of their pitchers. Last year, the injury bug was not exactly friendly. You saw, and some of their pitchers were just downright ineffective. I'm looking at you, Luis Severino. When you came and you started, you were 0-8 with an ERA that you shouldn't be having. You shouldn't have an ERA that's near double digits. That's unacceptable in any level. So he's got to come and kind of figure out how to make it work for him, because he really can't afford to be sent down to AAA again. He's got to be able to make an impact on the major league level. Now is the time. You want to establish yourself as a major league pitcher. Now's the time to prove it. Michael Pineda, we've known him as a big tease, and I mean that literally. The man is 6'7". He's been one of the biggest teases the Yankees have had in God knows how long. One game, he pitches like a Cy Young winner. The next day, he makes Rick Ankiel look like a world-class sniper, and he can't hit the strike zone. And it's just so frustrating to watch every 5 days, because it's like flipping a coin, like which Pineda is going to show up today, and you got a 50-50 shot of being right. And you look at him, he's doing the same things over and over again. It's just one day it works, and then the next day it's complete opposite end of the spectrum. CeCe Sabathia, last season, struggled to start and really came on strong at the end of the season and actually pitched pretty well for him first time in a few seasons. The man's 36, about to be 37 years old. He's no spring chicken anymore. He's not going to be the fireballer throwing 95, 96 like he did when he first came to the Yankees or when he was with Cleveland. He's got to be a guy like an Andy Pettit was at the end of his career, and we saw that last year. He started to make that transition, and I think he's finally accepted that he's not a power pitcher anymore. Luckily for them, they do have one consistent at the top of their rotation. That's Masahiro Tanaka. We started seeing some of those flashes of what we saw in 2014 with him. And during spring training, we've been really seeing it. A lot of it's against minor league hitters. But you're intrigued by what you see, and you hope that he can keep that going. I'm gonna give my predictions for what I think the Yankees and the Mets are going to do right now. It's still a little bit early, but you're starting to see what these teams are as we're in the last few minutes of this show here. You see what these teams are going to be and what their identity might be. So the Mets are in win now mode. Re-signing Cespedes, huge move, and you got Neil Walker back. They have a chance of being that wild card team, and if Washington falters, which we saw several years, which we saw back in 2015, they can make a run at the NL East division and crown. I could see them winning somewhere between 87 and 90. And I think Mets fans will be expecting that, to see them up in the 90 win range. As for the Yankees, their road is a little bit more difficult, because the Red Sox loaded up. And even though the Yankees know that this is not necessarily the year for them to be contending, it's baseball, it's a long season, anything is possible. I see them in the 84 to 85, 86 win range. So they can be there. We got a couple minutes left in the show. I just want to thank Devin and Kyle Palmieri for coming on today. Thank my man Brian behind the glass, because without him, none of this happens. And I want to thank all of you for listening. Without you guys, there's no me. I'm not here on the air, and I can't be out there doing that to you without you guys listening. So I always want to thank you. I'm very appreciative. So that's going to do it for us tonight. Thank you for listening in. And as always, stay mad, March. Have a good night.
In the previous program did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.